You're listening to Around Comics, episode 212, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Vexil by Funimation. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is normally recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. But this week, we're coming to you from Challengers Comics and Conversation. About 15 blocks south of Dark Tower, still on Western Avenue.
Just not too far from where we normally
not,
record.
Not too
Take
far.
Take that 48 bus and you can get there no problem.
It's
Hop on the 48.
Just south of the Blue Line stuff on Milwaukee if you are familiar with the Bucktown neighborhood. And we'll let you know why we are at Challengers as we get our panel introduced. I'm Christopher Niesman, your host, and I'm joined alongside Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello.
How you doing, sir?
I'm very good. I'm a little sick. But
fighting off that sinus infection?
Fighting off a little sinus infection. But I wanted to be here today, so I
absolutely
manned up.
I've jabbed you all day. You gonna make it? You gonna make it? And Mr. Tom Caters.
Hi.
Hi.
It's nice to record close to my house.
I know you're like almost walking distance.
I could leave at any time and walk home.
So if Tom suddenly drops off, you know that he's just gotten fed up and stomped out of here.
I got bored or something and walked away.
And now our special guest this week, while we are at Challengers Comics, he just finished up a signing for a couple hours, is comic superstar scribe Mr. James Robinson. James, how you doing?
I'm doing well, although I think that's an overstatement. A superstar is...
We say that about
everybody.
Every guy.
Okay. Well, you put that in perspective. Thank you very much.
You'll find that I like hyperbole.
Yes. Okay, good.
Yeah.
So it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, and I'm very happy to be here. This Chicago is, to quote the old Blue Eyes, one hell of a town, I'll tell you.
A little chilly, though.
A little chilly.
You came at a good time of year.
But it is still so beautiful here that... I would tell anyone who's ever been to Chicago, come to Chicago, no matter what the weather. Although I've heard that there is like 3.5 foot snow sometimes.
And that's just on the other side of the lake. That's in Indiana, Michigan.
You don't want to.
Don't want that.
Right. Don't go to Indiana.
Well, let me remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free, and actually InStock sponsored one of our book club episodes, which was the Starman Omnibus Volume 1.
Oh, wow. Well, then I love these people.
Solid people.
Well, I tell you, what's speaking of Starman, I think it's safe to say that's one of your cornerstone works.
Yes,
that you've had, and we Tom, I think you've read the whole series. I'm catching up in the omnibus, and
yes.
One of the reasons that I'm doing that is I, like a lot of other comic book fans, kind of fell out in the 90s whenever there was the rush of 90s comics that kind of pushed people away. But Starman is one of those series that I think got lost in the shuffle by a lot of people.
Yes, some people. What happened was that it developed this loyal following of about, I guess, 30,000 people. It initially had a little bit more sales, and it went down as all comic book sales were going down, and it held at about 30,000, and other books would come out and outsell it, and then they would slowly, their sales would decrease, and it always held steady. So for any of those loyal readers that followed it all throughout, thank you very much, because you made it a consistent seller, and I got to finished the whole Odyssey of Jack Knight through 80 issues because of you guys.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to be able, it's, at least it seemed to me from reading it at the time, that you got to actually finish the story like in a pace.
Well, and DC have been very nice to me that they've respected that and not had anyone else write Jack Knight. So, yeah, it is nice to do to have ideas at the start of a series, bring them through to fruition, and, you know, over many years, and feel this great sense of accomplishment.
See, I have an idea for Jack Knight with a sword.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm kidding. I'm going to come up with that.
With sort of the resurgence with the Omnibus, and before that, it was being collected in trades, but it seemed like, you know, at the time when you were writing it, it was obviously written specifically for just single issues. Have any idea, I mean, later on, or any feelings about it being collected, and especially now in this?
Well, it was my bright idea to not print the Times Past in chronological order, because I felt that it would be in these nice volumes. But as a result, if you've bought all the trade paperbacks, there's about half a dozen Times Past that have never been collected. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, like how he finds the rocket and things like that, where the rocket comes from that sends him into space.
Right.
So it was kind of a mistake. And I don't know that DC took the series, the collections, that seriously. So these omnibuses are, you know, they're taking them seriously now in the book, and it's sold for what is really kind of a high ticket item in terms of price. I can't say it's a cheap book. It's gone to reprint, and very few hardcover books do that. So it's the person that I should make a point of thanking here and now, but get out of the way, Anton Kawasaki, who is the collections editor of the book. It was his idea, and he got behind it, and he's Kawasaki. Sorry, he is. Without him, this wouldn't have happened, and I'm glad that his faith in the book and in me and his enjoyment of it in the past has been validated, and he looks good.
One of the things with Starman that I really felt is,
mind if I do a little?
Oh yeah, go for it. One of the things about Starman that I
Chris
felt.
Chris is going to eBay that bottle. Uh huh. Just so you know,
I got my buyer right over there.
I am freezing cold because I'm not used to it. So they have some Jim Beam, which I am
taking little
nips of periodically, and it's going down a treat.
Matt Kramer, what would you spend on this bottle of James Robinson sipped on Jim Beam? This could be my Christmas budget right here.
Well, for all of us.
One of the things that I found with Starman reading, and it's, you know, over 10 years old now,
yes,
that the sensibility of the writing really seems to have influenced a lot of the writing that we see in comics today. Whenever you were writing Starman back in the 90s, were you consciously trying to do something different than what had come before it?
Well, I'll tell you what this was. It was that I'm not by any means comparing me to these creators who I consider to be great men of the field of comics, but the comic books that excited me when I was growing up was the work of Frank Miller and Alan Moore, and, you know, Howard Chaykin doing Black Hawk and Matt Wagner doing Mage and Grendel, and I mean obviously Mage and Grendel is a little bit more mature, but it really felt like a combination of like the comic books you loved growing up, and with this sort of postmodern sensibility. But at no point did one piss on the other, to use the colloquial. And unfortunately, a lot of that stuff, I think, got sort of hijacked by Vertigo comics. And there were some great Vertigo comics, I'm not knocking the line. But it became one or the other. The DC comics that were coming out as Vertigo was enjoying its first sort of brush with success seem to have taken a backward step in terms of the sensibilities that I like, the sensibilities of, you know, Batman Year One and like I say, Black Hawk and American Flag and things like that. So I just wanted to do that book. And I actually tried to interest Vertigo in a sort of a version of Starman with a different character. But I always wanted to do this. I had this, and originally I had this idea for to kind of do a different version with Will Payton in my mind, and I knew that you could. I mean, with all due respect to the people that wrote the Starman, the Will Payton Starman, you could tell as it was sort of getting towards the end, it was sort of limping towards cancellation. And I said to Archie, I said, look, if you get, when this book is cancelled, get us this book, reserve the character, and I promise you I'll do a whole different thing that you'll like and approve of, and you'll get behind. So back to your question, it was me trying to recapture the books I liked. It wasn't me doing something new, I felt. It was me trying to mirror better creators than me that had done this sort of work before me.
It's funny, I had just finished, last week, finished reading the Starman Omnibus, this first volume, and I think I told you earlier, I really enjoyed the afterword that you wrote for it and sort of how you went out of your way to thank a lot of the people that early in your career helped you out, and specifically Archie Goodwin.
Archie Goodwin, yes.
Could you talk a little bit about Archie and your relationship with him?
Well, I'm drinking booze, so I might start crying. So this could become a very emotional episode.
I am the Barbara Walters of comic book interviewers.
If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
The thing about Archie is, as anyone will tell you, if you didn't like him, there's something wrong with you. And he was just a great guy. He got behind my work. He always did. I mean, there were copies of... Someone had a copy of London's Dark here. He gave me a quote for that before I really knew him. Got me, you know, always stayed in contact. And as soon as he was able to give me work, he did. And I really owe my career to him. And also, I learned how to write comics from him to a greater or lesser degree. Just a wonderful, wonderful man. Also, as people... I urge anybody that is interested in great writing, great art, to get those creepy archives that are being done by Dark Horse, because they're all written by Archie. He edited the book and wrote every story with amazing art by Steve Ditko and Alex Toth, my hero, another one of my heroes, and Gene Colan and various great artists, Johnny Craig. So he was a great writer. Manhunter, one of the greatest miniseries. What, I don't know how many, it's no more than 40 pages in total, and yet it still resonates today as a fantastic piece of work. So, you know, he was that. He was my friend. He was an editor. He made sure I wanted to do, you know, the Vigilante trade that's coming out soon, City Lights, Prairie Justice. This is not meant as a plug. It's really meant as talking about Archie. He made sure that got out. And even when he was ill, he was so graceful with it that it was just a sort of pleasure to constantly be around him, and he's missed.
He's one of the people that kind of comes up in conversation over and over again. John Byrne, we talked to a couple years ago, and just the obvious respect that he had for him, and talked to Denny O'Neill last year, and Archie Goodwin just keeps coming up as one of the guys that wasn't just respected in the industry, but was just loved by everyone that he touched.
Absolutely.
You're speaking about Starman, and when you approached writing it, it was in an effort to sort of duplicate stuff that you, well, not duplicate, but modeled after stuff that you had read before. It's interesting because I think sometimes when people look back on something like Starman, people assume that, like, this plan for this really long story, all, you know, from issue one, obviously everyone knows it's going to end up the way that it ends up. For you, was there a point where you finally thought, wow, I'm going to be able to tell the complete story that I want to tell? You know, was there a point where you're like, I don't know if I'm going to get to the end. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it.
There were a couple of points. Well, firstly, I should say that the feeling about Starman, there was such a lack of faith in the title, not in my work, but just in the idea of Starman, that originally it was a 4-issue miniseries. And it was never intended as that, but it was originally going to be a 4-issue miniseries, and I was always going to end it with a cliffhanger of the Blue Starman being alive and Will Payton being alive as well, with the hope that that would be enough that we got a regular series out of it. Mike Carlin, there was a lot of editors involved at DC, and how one editor had to sign off on another editor's work and stuff like that. So Mike Carlin was also someone I owe thanks to, because as he was watching the stuff come in, he's like, you know what, we should just make this into a monthly book. And this is before the first issue was solicited or anything like that. But he was the one that said, you know what, let's just keep the thing going. So those first four issues are kind of a finite thing, but around about issue 7, I began to get the idea for some of the things. Like, it's relatively early on that Charity, fortune teller, says, I see you going on a drive with your son. That's the last issue.
Yeah.
So all this stuff, little things you go, oh, I'll deal with that later, and other things you know you're going to be actually, you know, dealing with from very early on. So I forget the question. What were you saying?
I was saying at what point, I was thinking of that. Oh, when do you have the issue with trading? Like, when
so,
did you realize
so I had
that?
It all in mind, but then, like, there's a point midway where you're like, well, you know, is the book, like, before I realized there was this fan base that would keep the book going, I was like, fuck, you know, we're losing some readership as all books
do. I gotta fit that drive in somehow.
Yeah, so how am I gonna do this? And then there was a point where I was just getting a bit disheartened with comics. It was just sort of burning me out. So at one point I was tempted, when he goes off into space and Tony Harris was leaving the book, to just say, you know, the readers can write the end of this for themselves. And then I was like, I can't do it. I gotta see it, you know, because I knew how I wanted to do Grand Guignol and everything else. And I'd set up so much of it ahead of time that I decided to see it through. When Archie died, obviously, that also I thought might affect the book in somehow. But we were very lucky that we got Peter Tomasi, who was a great, you know, bench relieving editor. He picked up from, you know, best editor in comics and ran with it, and he did a great job finishing it off. I was also worried that without Tony Harris we might lose readership, but Peter Snaberg, great, fantastic artist, made the book his own. So there were a lot of places where I thought I wouldn't get to do the book I got to do, but luckily none of those things happened.
To ask you a little bit, this is my first experience with Starman. I didn't read it initially when it came out.
You're forgiven, Sal.
Thank you. but I've really enjoyed it. And one of the things, I really, really enjoyed the last arc in this book, Sins of the Sun, those last four issues, I think it is.
Yes, that's right.
And what came, you know, sort of hit me after reading that last part of it was the idea of, like, the things that are important to us sort of define us.
Yes.
And, you know, in the beginning of the book, obviously the collectibles, the things that Jack collects and sells, he's very interested in that. But as I start reading more and more of it, it seems like everyone, it's sort of, you talk about, you know, what is important to people, whether it's movies or Broadway shows or the things that you collect. And then I think the one moment was, you know, in the beginning of the story, Jack's father is sort of, looks down a little bit on his passion and these collectibles, and at the end of the story, it's his own things that he's kept from when he was Starman that save him.
Right.
I guess I was just wondering, I mean, is that something that's really close to you? Is that
It was something that was very close to me at the time. You see, you know, I mean, Jack Knight, although there are many differences, there's a lot of me in that character. Without wishing to spoil it for you, one of the things is Jack ultimately prioritizing his life and realizing there are more important things than collectibles. I think...
What? A lot of people just turned off.
Yeah, I know.
I realize what you're talking about.
I know. This is, let me clarify this. I don't think there's anything wrong with a hobby. I don't think there's anything wrong with collecting comic books. I don't think there's anything wrong with having 200 comic boxes of comics in your basement, or every mini bust that Randy Bowen puts out. That's fine. That is absolutely fine. It is if you would rather have an imaginary relationship with Storm than go out and try and meet a girl or socialize or be aware of the world. When the hobby becomes the be all end of your existence, then you have a problem.
Yeah.
Is it Storm when she was dressed up like a punk? Is that true?
Because she didn't say no. Yeah. Back then. That's all I'm going to say.
In how old, man?
So, yes.
How do you feel about a guy that brings 80 issues of Starman to a signing and has them all signed at once? That's...
I'm calling you out, Kramer.
No, he left.
But it's funny that you mentioned that, because comic book villains is sort of a very similar.
Up that.
Is that something you don't? Is that one of the
things? No, it isn't. No, we can talk about it. It's not the greatest movie that's ever made.
No, but it's very much, that strikes
very close to home.
People were offended by that, like I'd spat on the American flag or something, and all I was saying was, you can read comics, enjoy comics.
Don't
murder someone for comics. No, but just like, you know,
I really enjoy that movie.
I don't think that Archie, the boy, I named him after Archie Goodwin, that's obvious, is ever going to not read comic books. But he's traveling, he's enjoying life, and he meets a beautiful girl.
I read it that the message that you had is that while comic books may be valuable, baseball cards are where the real money is.
Well,
that's true. Yes. Yeah.
There's some truth. In
there's
there.
Some truth to that.
Well, some people may not know you wrote and directed.
A low budget movie called Comic Book Villains. It was made for not very much money, but actually everyone put so much work into it that it looks like a more expensive movie that wasn't very well made.
It's a great cast,
but it's actually a lot of people doing a lot of good work.
I really liked it too.
It was meant to be a black comedy. And I guess it is kind of a black comedy, but
arson. Whenever there's arson involved,
yeah, and a wife killing her husband.
Yeah, you've entered the realm of
black
comedy.
But the thing about it is, where was I going with this one? Black comedy that takes rehearsal time. There's a nuance to it that when you're frantically trying to get it done. You know where you're filming five pages of dialogue and you're setting fire to the whole set. You just can't get the everything that you had in mind. I storyboarded the whole film, and ultimately all of that was thrown out. And it's just like, okay, we got to do this, we got to do that, and you know, and it was my first film, so and no one's let me do another one since. So hopefully, but I'm actually just now come up with an idea that I do want to direct, so I'm going to write that. And hopefully I will be behind the camera again at some point.
Well, I think that leads me into another question about something you wrote, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
James, come back.
I'm not a hater of that film, so don't worry.
Okay.
I did have a question about it, though. Yes. I mean, obviously, you know, there was a lot of, I guess we'd say controversy, but people complaining, bitching, whatever, because it didn't maybe follow the source material as fully as comic fans wanted it to. I was wondering, was that a decision that was sort of dictated to you? Was that your decision? Was that how did that come about?
It was a combination of things. Firstly, to be fair to me, and normally I do not defend myself with any of this, but to be fair to me, if you look at that series, which I love objectively, it is the first act of a movie. The first four issues of that movie is the recruiting of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and then there's a twist and there's the ending.
Right.
That is not a movie. So I had to come up with the rest of the movie. It's like, you know, The Killers, the fantastic film noir movie. That's a very, very short story by Ernest Hemingway that is the first two or three minutes of the movie,
right.
But it's not the movie. So I started on a path. This movie was rewritten.
Well, that was my next question. How much of it changed between the time you finished writing it and it became a film?
It wasn't so much that. It got changed. What happened was I had a lot of freedom to write the first couple of drafts. And it got to the point where the head of the studio got behind the project. And in terms of at the time, there were two people that could star in that movie. There was Sean Connery. Mm-hmm. When you think about the age and being able to make a movie, you know, the movie of that scope. Sean Connery and possibly Anthony Hopkins, and if they hadn't agreed, the movie wouldn't have ever been made.
Right.
But when you have a superstar on board a movie, it goes off like
changes things.
Well, the executive that's in charge of the film, the creative executive, has input, and you deal with him. The moment you have Sean Connery, or the moment you have Tom Hanks, or the moment you have whoever in the movie, everyone comes out the woodwork. They've all got an opinion.
The power shifts.
Every producer has an opinion, and suddenly the script is pulled this way and that way, and Connery has an opinion, you know, and the director has an opinion, and suddenly it becomes this mosaic of different personalities and sensibilities. And at some point, like, the original drafts, and I was trying to hold on to this right to the very end of when the script was being locked, and was to try and at least keep the essence of Alan Moore, who I respect. And I don't want, you know, Alan Moore thinking I'm a jerk, but...
Right.
So
I might put a spell on you.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I've been walking funny since I got back from Prague, so...
Those antlers look good on you.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Tis the season.
I tried to keep at least the feel of it and the essence of it, and there was a lot of dialogue, there was a lot of the more risque... I mean, it wasn't like dirty talk, but it was just, there was more of a risque feel, there was more of a kind of a banter to the dialogue, and a lot of that stuff got either didn't get filmed or was edited out, because as people know, Sean Connery decided I'm not gonna make another movie after this because it was such a bad experience. So then the director kind of had a falling out with Fox, so they lost faith in the project, I think, at the same time that The X-Men 2, which was for a superhero movie, a great superhero movie, made a shitload of money. So they decided we're going to do the Victorian X-Men. But as a result, it was too late for that.
Yeah.
It was, you know, you're turning a fish into a fowl. So it suffered from that as well. So all the little edginess got taken away, as well as some of the, I thought, some of the dialogue explained why people did things. So the plot at some points doesn't really make a lot of sense. So, you know, but I'm the writer, and people never think, you know, that see these movies.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, it's all my fault. Every word is because of me, and every pause and everything else.
You're berating Sean Connery and telling him to, like,
Sean Connery was a complete gentleman to me and was very nice to me for the time when I was in Prague and they were filming it. So I have no problem with Sir Sean at all. But in hindsight, it's not in hindsight, I knew this at the time, Legal to a Gentleman should have been with sort of semi-crappy BBC special effects, it should have been like a six-part British BBC play with class British theatrical talent doing it with Hyde tearing apart process. I mean, the thing is, you know, being true to the book, the mistake was trying to do it as a summer movie. You know, the book has a rapist...
An opium den.
An opium den. The hero's an opium addict.
Yeah.
Hyde is tearing apart prostitutes, and they're the good guys.
Blockbuster.
So I mean, but I mean that was the point, I think, of the series, yeah. And that got lost. So, long story short, I forget the question, but that's sort of the.
I just want to know.
That's the truth, sort of how I feel about it. And but one of the bravest things I ever did, I think, was do a panel on film, on adapting comics into films, and it was just sort of every heroic, not heroic guy, but every guy that looked like saints for doing X-Men 2 and me. So it's me, Brian Singer's on stage, and then I'm at the end, basically apologizing. So
sorry,
yeah,
sorry about that.
Next. Well, I don't think you're the only screener that's had a hard time adapting an Alan Moore comic to film. So I wouldn't.
Well,
I mean, it's just the nature of first comic books. Yeah.
Yes,
into film.
It is. But I do think that what's his name? 300.
Zack Snyder.
He's kind of putting us all to shame a little bit. However, I will say that what he basically does is adapt the comic. He just uses those as storyboards and does them. It isn't
right.
Like there's this huge reinterpretation. Maybe that's the secret. Don't break what isn't. Don't fix what isn't broken. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
We'll find out if there's a rape scene in Watchmen.
I don't know. Well, I mean, but
I think opium dens are coming back. for some movies.
It would have been really interesting to see Connery as an opium den.
Why didn't we host this in one? It would have been...
All right, well, I tell you what, we have a couple questions that were emailed in here.
All right.
This first one is from Augie DeBleek from the Pipeline.
It's not political, is it?
No, it's not a political question from Augie. Augie does the Pipeline article and podcast over at CBR. I'll go with the obvious question for those of us who remember the book. Any further plans for Leave It to Chance? Is there ever a chance that we'll see another miniseries or even an animated series or a movie? The oversized hardcovers were beautiful, but I want more.
Augie, thank you for that question, and thank you for liking Leave It to Chance. You never say never, but at the moment, it's not looking promising in that Paul Smith and myself, whilst not there's no problem between us or anything else, we just don't talk anymore. And we've had opportunities to do the book, and they've always fallen through. And I just think that if something turned up where there was a opportunity to do it, I would jump at that opportunity. But I do think that it's not looking good at the moment, and I'm sorry about that because. We left the book on a cliffhanger. I mean, at the point where we left the book, the father was dead. There was a mysterious figure, you know, pulling the strings of the crime and magic kind of underworld. And obviously we were building towards a finale. And then we had an idea that after we were done with, just because, you know, poor schedule, after we were done with that series, it was only going to be two more issues, then we were going to do... like Tintin volumes, where there would be one a year, and then Paul could go off and do, you know, because these, all the, I'm looking at people listening at home, I'm looking at like all the alternate trade paperbacks and graphic novels as I'm talking. Most of these people didn't make money when they were doing the work. They hopefully got money in royalties and stuff once it was done. So Paul, who has the, you know, the lion's share of the work, would have time if we did these Tintin volumes that he could go off and do, you know, a four issue whatever and make some dough and everything else. That was the dream, and I don't think that dream is going to be a reality.
You've been working on the Superman books.
Yes.
And one of my favorite reads of probably the last couple of months was the Jimmy Olsen special.
Thank you.
Yeah, which I really enjoyed. And one of the things that really struck me about it is, depending on when people start reading comics, or when they started reading Superman comics, assuming that they have some idea of what Jimmy Olsen is, Jimmy Olsen, depending on when you start reading, could have been like a Cub reporter, could have been like a man of action, could have been a guy who, you know, fought spies. It all depends on when you started. I was just wondering if what drew you to that version, that sort of like more man of action, Jimmy Olsen type.
I disagree with you in that what I tried to do was combine the Cub reporter and the man of action.
Okay.
In that he is still learning. Like, I believe that in the 20 years from now that won't happen, he will be the editor-in-chief of the Daily Planet. But he hasn't learned all his skills yet. But he's still, I mean, he's not man of action. He doesn't fight anybody.
No.
He runs.
He jumps off a motorcycle.
He jumps off a motorcycle, and he holds it, and he breathes for a reed in the water.
I can't do that.
But but he isn't outwitting the guy. He's running scared. So, but there's still that action element. So that was what I used to like about Jimmy Olsen, was that fantastic element to him, and the fact that these crazy things happened to him, but he was still this slightly inept, hadn't learned all his skills yet guy. So that's where I was coming from, and okay. I think that kind of was there, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, right. That makes sense.
It's a great Jimmy Olsen story.
I had one question before you go on there, going to the Superman stuff, and going back to what we were talking about collectability and collecting things, and I was wondering how you felt about John's sort of turning Brainiac into the ultimate collector of things. Well, if you talk to them about that,
well, this
at all,
is
or...
no, not really. This is the thing about Jeff, is he's a genius at, and I'm trying to learn how to do that now with the world. The Faces of Evil. I've done the Parasite, and the Parasite is possibly the most boring character to write ever, unless you try and make him, interesting.
Right.
So I've tried to make the parasite interesting, and Jeff said I've succeeded. So when that comes out, you can either on the because by the way, all you guys that get on the web chats and. You're so mean, all of you. I don't even read that stuff now because it's just depressing. Anyway, I've drunk a good third of the gin by now, so it's all coming out.
It went from crying to angry.
There'll be the full range of emotions. Hang on, I hadn't finished that question though. What Jeff does is he will take a character. And he'll incorporate all the versions. Mm-hmm. That Toy Man special, the Toy Man issue rather, was brilliant in doing that. Yeah. And I think that Brainiac combining all of the different versions and making sense of every stupid knuckleheaded decisions when the original character had so much. It was just just pure. Like you could have done a cool modern version of that pure character, and he's kind of done that. So. Collectibles, yeah, he can have collected, you know, All-Star number 3 and have it in his spaceship, and I'm fine with it.
Well, that's break the Mylar seal on those cities.
Well, that's actually perfect timing because our next question is from Jeff Johns in Los Angeles, California. Yes, it is. And
this is your life.
Yeah. Oh, we got all
Paul
sorts.
Smith.
Of...
wants to know.
We've got all sorts of surprises tonight. All right, Jeff wants to know why. Are gorillas funny?
This is something that Jeff pointed out to me. Actually, it's not. That's not true. That isn't what he's asking me. Why are monkeys funny?
Okay.
Which is gorillas, monkeys, different species. But let's not get.
I was going to correct that.
Yes,
because that's obviously a much larger question.
But it's that, like, Tom. Tom drinks a Samuel Adams. Not funny. Monkey drinks a Samuel Adams.
Hilarious.
Quite funny. Tom drives his Audi to the park.
Yeah.
Monkey drives an Audi to the park. Funny.
Correction. I drive my Audi while wearing a clown suit.
There you go. Kind of funny.
Still not funny.
But there is nothing nothing you can describe. That if a monkey does it, he can cake. Sal eats some cake, not funny. Monkey eats cake, hilarious. So that is why. That is why.
You win.
Well, speaking of Jeff Johns.
So Tom was at the zoo. He saw two gorillas mating. That was a gorilla and another gorilla. And you stole them, both of them.
Yes.
They're at home, down the road. You should have brought them with you.
I see that sort of collecting as more of a personal thing that I don't want to share. There's a time for when I'm by myself.
All right.
With your gorillas.
With your gorillas.
Yeah, exactly. When I'm just hanging out.
We can keep that secret.
Well, you've had a nice working relationship with Jeff Johns, dating back to the JSA, and now with the new Krypton stuff. Do you guys obviously work well together? What's your relationship like?
It's a great relationship. I mean, I met him as a fan. He came up to me to get a copy of something signed at Novi Motor City Con years and years and years ago. And then he was the only, and I don't want to offend anybody, but when people ask you, can I write to you? You write all day. The last thing, I just want to sit down and watch Cops or, you know, download porn. I don't want to.
You got your feather and ink.
You don't need to write now necessarily.
But I actually gave him like a PO box number, because I need a fool would give someone a real
PO box number.
Yeah. No, I wrote back to him a few times, and then I just, you know, personal stuff, and I closed the PO box and blah blah blah. Then a few years later, he had made friends with Chuck Kim, who was the assistant editor at Starman, and I remade friends with him then, when he was assistant to Richard Donner. And he then got into comics, and I think he's the best writer in comics. One of my goals is to win Jeff Johns an Eisner Award. And the fact that he doesn't have one makes the awards a sham, in my opinion.
He's good. I like him. He's my favorite writer.
I know he's your favorite writer. I know he's your favorite writer.
Have I mentioned that before?
Once or twice. Well, we were talking about your Superman work, and this is definitely a Superman family question. This is from another fanboy. This is from Greg Rucka in Portland, Oregon.
Are you joking?
No.
Okay. Go on.
Greg would
I left a message. By the way, Greg, call me back because I left you a message today. So don't just assume that I'm gonna be offended if you don't call me back.
Greg would like you to explain how time passes in the Phantom Zone.
I'm taking out the belt of Jim Beam for that one.
It's an imaginary story.
I think that time passes in the Phantom Zone.
This is like a quiz.
You know what, Greg, I'm going to be thinking about this while I'm answering other questions, and then I promise I will close this by answering that question.
That's it.
I'm okay with that. I've never wondered.
I don't think time passes.
Oh, of course
that was
it
the whole point.
Just
oh, wait, maybe it does.
Well, you know what?
Isn't that why
you're polluting his
what's
mind?
His name?
Yeah, stop. Just stop, Sal.
Sorry.
What the hell?
All right.
Go on.
We'll do one more. Then yeah. All right, this one is from Peter Rios from the Comic Geek Speak podcast.
Does anyone that actually listened to this show ask a question?
Yeah, it's all comic book writers and podcasters.
It is. I
know. So far. Do we have any other listeners?
We'll come back to Pete. This is from Chris Neeson, whose name really freaks me out.
This is very similar to yours.
Yeah, I told him it was like the Earth 2 version of me emailing me.
This means wow. He actually wrote this question.
No, Chris Neeson from Ohio. He said there were rumors that that you may be writing one last Starman story. Is there any truth to that?
That stems from the possibility. There is one. The chronology of Starman is pretty tight in that to fit an untold story into it would be tricky. There is one place where I could do it, and I had an idea. After this will make sense to people that read Starman, when all the people come out of the post-demons world and return, all from different times, it would be Jack helping this old Japanese guy to go to Japan to die. Where and he's sort of, you know, he went into the poster 100 years prior, so he comes back to Japan, and it's him talking to Jack and about the changes in Japan now and Japan of 100 years ago before the war and everything else. So that would be an interesting sort of adult thing at the same time that they get involved with the Yakuza and Japanese demons. So that was the idea. It's pretty good, actually. When I tell you that back, it is a pretty good idea, isn't it?
I thought it was going to be like Jack Eats Lunch.
Yeah.
Well, really adventurous.
but I Tony and I, you know, we still talk to each other. We're still friends. But he has, you know, really moved on, and he's doing all this work. I don't know. Again, it's there's more chance of that than Leave It to Chance, I think. But I just don't know that that's in the cards either. And I'm just wary because I feel like, you know, and I'm not a guy that pats myself on the back too often, but I really think that I did a really good job of ending that series, and I'm just wary of bringing Jack Knight back.
You don't
want to
do like Aftermath?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What's wrong with?
Oh, I've offended Tom.
Oh, what? Like you didn't want to know what happened to Radar Aftermath is over?
You went back to Iowa.
I just found out there was an after Golden Girls.
What?
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they open a hotel
with Cheech.
Oh, Cheech. Marin.
What?
I'm not saying that you both plan to lie to me about this.
No, but by the way, are you guys fans of Fawlty Towers?
Oh yeah,
Fawlty Towers. I enjoy them.
I just found out recently. I saw one episode. It was truly awful. There was an American version of Fawlty Towers.
Yes, there was.
That's god awful.
It's not very good at all.
We don't do British TV exceptionally well. It's
The Office.
Rare.
Yeah, The Office is really
yeah, but,
different.
But it's become very
different.
Because in America, you can't have a show where people aren't secretly actually good at their job. Like all of they're all actually like good at their jobs, as opposed to the British Office, where there's no pretense that any of them are actually
right.
decent at their jobs.
Yeah,
And Life on Mars is appalling. Ooh, I haven't seen it yet, but is it come out yet, or is it?
Yeah, it's over already, isn't it?
Is it over?
I think
maybe.
Do you know where they screwed up there? Do you know where they screwed up there? Is I think they should have set it in like Dallas or somewhere. If they're going to do it at all, because now that's a big built-up city. 30 years ago, that would have been a small Western town, and we could have had the racist, not the sheriff, but the racist towards, the immigrants and all of that. Mm-hmm. And it would have been so different, the then and now, that would have worked.
Well, they placed it in basically the American version of London by having it in New York.
But New York isn't that different.
Wife Morris, the UK version was in Manchester, so I think originally it was...
Oh, well, that's true. That's a point. And the other thing is, I was born in Manchester, I grew up in London, but that was a very different place in the 70s than it is today. Mm-hmm. So... that's sort of why it worked.
I think originally Life on Mars, the American version, was it Los Angeles?
They filmed the whole pilot. They scrapped.
Oh, I thought it was going to be in Baltimore, which kind of makes sense. But
I don't really know Baltimore.
Okay, but Los Angeles,
Baltimore would. I know Baltimore. I know. Yeah. I've seen Homicide.
The Wire. The Wire is all about Baltimore. Well, let's get to Peter's questionnaire. He goes, he would like to know about the JSA hardcover. That you've been working on, quoted as a masterpiece, as you called it.
Hang on a minute. Mm-hmm. Who did this? Is that you or him?
No, it's in quotes. It's in quotes.
Oh.
So I did air.
made it look like you wanker.
I can't believe he said that. Masterpiece.
He said, not sure what the story would be about, possibly the origin of the JSA?
Yes, it's the origin of the JSA. I've been so distracted, and no one has pushed me on it that I've, the contract signed. I'm doing the book, and I have to get back to it, and I will finish it.
Is the Spear of Destiny in it?
No, but it is very much. It's sort of like what leads up to the Justice Society. Each character would be drawn by a different artist. It would be like nothing on the. It would be like nothing you've ever seen in a book before.
I just want to make sure my collectible Spear of Destiny I bought retains its high value. As many stories involving it as you can.
Is it kind of neat for you that a lot of the groundwork that you laid in Starman and JSA and the Golden Age that has really been incorporated into what DC is doing now that,
I'm trying to think about this. Well, how much of Starman has been incorporated? I don't know that there has, really.
I think mostly
I just found
just
out that Charity is in... Someone told
Trinity.
Me that. In Trinity. Was it you?
Yeah.
Well, I think the flashbacks to the Golden Age characters when they showed up, I think at the time, there wasn't a place where you would see the Red Bee. Those characters were very much... both literally in limbo or sort of dead. You just never... It was almost like DC was embarrassed about the Golden Age characters a little bit, and there wasn't any stories about them really.
I just think, and Jeff agrees with me, there isn't a bad... I mean, people say that. There isn't a bad character. You can make... I mean, he brought back Ultra the Multi-Alien. and the Creature Commandos. There isn't a bad character. It's just how you do them.
Yeah.
And you can. Everyone, they're given a character. They change everything. They kill off the wife, or they do some. They
give move, them a
they,
sword.
They move. Yeah, they give them a sword.
That's your favorite.
Sword. Some new armor, costume.
But ultimately, just tell a good story. Yeah. And the fact that I have an affection for these characters. I mean, the beauty of these characters is they're all like in that you're talking about the when you say the Red Bee, you're referring to that talking with David. But I think I nailed Mr. Terrific. Everyone was like, "Oh my God, Mr. Terrific, great character." Those Golden Age stories were not great; they were terrible.
Yeah,
but he was a guy.
Mr. Terrific was hardly ever the only story previous to that I can really remember as being like a really memorable Mr. Terrific is when he got killed.
Well, he got killed, and I think he appeared twice. Very minimally in the Justice Society crossovers, but even then he wasn't a so at no point was he resonant, but he had fair play. It was so weird, this guy with fair play, that people have this imaginary version of how cool he was. Mm-hmm. But him saying that, in a way, made him cool, acknowledging that himself. And it's just like turning these characters into people. And, there are good writers doing that now.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. I'm not saying I did anything great, but I just think I cared about those characters and I wanted them to have a personality.
Well, the writing style, so for a lot of those Golden Age characters, there's so much room to introduce personality
because they're blank slates.
Yeah, they're pretty much
the same character.
They just weren't written that way.
It's interesting that Paul Smith who's very really thinks about depicting characters, body shape. The only person I think that does more with all that sort of stuff is maybe Alan Davis, who I guess designs every character. I've heard he designs every character he does from the skeleton up, different the way that the bones are and the characters. Pretty fucking impressive. Excuse my French. But he pointed out he had a problem. Every character has blonde hair in the Golden Age.
Yeah, they all do.
So giving them different haircuts and stuff was a big thing with him, you know?
And we're just giving them different, even stuff like height. They're all the same. They're the same white guy that's about 6 feet tall with blonde hair.
Right.
All of them are.
Right. So I wanted Green Lantern to be big. And he wanted Iron Man to be this hulking figure, you know?
Yeah.
And he did a wonderful job of doing that. And also he wanted the inking style, which was Alex Raymond inking style, that he was trying to pull off this feathered look, which wasn't normally what he did. But again, even visually, they're kind of a blank slate, these characters.
Yeah. Well, they're all, when you read those old stories, even if you read like Justice League stories from the 60s, they're all very interchangeable. You can just move the words around. The individual characters didn't necessarily have their own voice.
I think that's why Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman are the big three, because they really do have some of their own, something intrinsically theirs. And there's also secondarily a reason why, like, I'm looking at a poster as I say this of Jay Garrick. I don't know if it's the combination of like Carmen Infantino's artwork, but there is a Boy Scout quality to him.
Yeah,
a brightness to him and the smile on his face that I think resonates to this day. But I mean, that's four characters out of 400, so it's hard.
Now, talking about mining Golden Age and Silver Age characters, you now have a new project that's been announced, the Justice League, and want to know how did you decide to bring Kong Gorilla into a mainstream team book, which I think is great.
I repeat, there is no bad character. There's any bad characterization. And when I wrote the script for the first issue, I guess Dan DiDio, who approved all this, gave me the benefit of the doubt on Kong Gorilla. And he said, "You won me over. So just wait and see. You will love this guy."
Well, what was your process for putting this team together? Because I think the roster is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, the process was which characters need to be in a team. And it was me and Dan picking them from an Adam Kubert cover poster where they're all running towards you. It's kind of was the big... And he said, "Well, that's about five of them," and I said, "Well, I want to use Ray Palmer," and he's like, "Great," and he says, "And then you're good at finding those obscure characters, so do a couple of those," and that was.
You said, "Kong Gorilla."
I pretty much did, and the Blue Starman, who I wanted to bring back and use, and here he is.
So let me see if I've got all of them straight here. It is. Green Lantern, the Hal Jordan, Ollie Queen, Green Arrow, Ray Palmer, Supergirl, Batwoman, Captain Marvel Jr. Well, it's Freddy. It's Freddy. The Blue Star Man, Michael Thomas, and Kong Gorilla.
Yes.
And you want to know if they're called Kong Gorilla Bill?
Yeah, they're going to call him Bill. They're
going to call him Bill, that's right. In fact, everybody in the book, with the exception of Batwoman... They're all known by their first names. No one ever calls anybody by their Hal, Ollie, if that's how they're known.
Kara,
Ray.
I really like that.
Me too.
I've noticed that recently in the last couple of years that I always, when I go and write, I read stuff where they, it's weird to think of someone of like Hal Jordan and Barry Allen being friends, but when they're together, they call each other Flash and Green Lantern.
Right.
Like that would be,
right.
Well,
that's one of the things about JSA that I noticed is that it was really a family, and they refer to each other as Alan and Jay, and you know that there's a real family feel about that. And these teams, I think, are better. You know, that was one of the things about X-Men is that you always felt that as dysfunctional as they were a family.
Right.
And I think that's when team books really work, is whenever you feel that with them.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to clap.
applauding. No, he's like, no.
Not that your answer was bad.
That's the slow hand clap. That's like get off the stage, isn't it?
As I have nothing to do with my hands. I'm not used to having the guest here. Talking to them, so I usually just kind of stare off into space.
People normally phone in.
Yes,
it's usually email, and I do their voice. It's usually a chat.
Well, that's almost a one man show. You should take it on the road.
Actually, Tom does a one man podcast. He started out doing a Tom versus the JLA, where he would do reviews, not even really reviews, it's kind of blow by blow
synopses.
I'm going to talk about all the old JLA issues because I love reading the old Silver Age and Bronze Age issues, and just pointing out like the really funny stuff, like the Justice League having like a VHS machine in their satellite. You know, like the funniest stuff about, you know, like in the future they still listen to records. Things like that.
Now he does Tom versus the Flash, and
amount of free time. Like, too much.
People listening in, he sort of shuddered and gave a really intense way that he said that. That wasn't like
My fiance lives in Pittsburgh. I got a lot of free time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like way too much, really. Let's move on.
Yes.
Hang on. Well, I've got to answer Greg Rucker's question.
Oh yes, that's
right.
Should we end with?
Oh, yeah. What's
well, we don't have to end yet. I'm having fun, but
okay.
You can. And I'm getting through your Jim Beam, which is
nice.
Keep talking then.
Enjoy. Yeah. I'm gonna have you sign that bottle. And I tell you what, we may do that as part of our Hero Initiative giveaway.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Just when you thought this wasn't gonna get creepy. Yeah.
Especially if some 10-year-old kid ends up buying it.
In Wisconsin.
You have to go north of the border.
Yeah, in Wisconsin, it's legal. Okay, so Greg's question, which was, how does time work in the Phantom Zone?
I think that for the purposes of things, it's interesting that this is here now. I think we have to deal with the different areas of the Phantom Zone having time pockets. Sometimes you can age in a minute, 10 years, and sometimes time slows down to nothing at all.
It's very convenient.
Well, it's one of those bullshit answers, but if a writer as talented as Greg writes that, it will all make sense and everyone will believe it and love it. So I have absolute faith in him.
You know, it's one of the interesting things that you've done well, and Jeff obviously does well, is coming up with these actually believable from within the comic book realm of bringing characters back, of making characters relevant. How hard is it to sit down and say, I need to figure out a way to make X character relevant again, or this character has been dead for 10, 15 years. I need to find a not bullshitty way to bring them back.
I think that the thing about that is that we all, like, I don't decide, I'm going to bring back... Who's a character I don't like? This is not a character I don't like, but as an example, I don't go, just for shits and giggles, I'm going to bring back the Inferior Five. I have no idea how to do that. I only bring back characters that I have... There's some resonance to me. As long as you do that, you kind of... Then you hit the ground running because you have affection for the character, and you don't want to make... If you have a friend... I sound so awful when I'm saying this. I sound like a complete
remember
kid.
Who you're talking to.
When you care about these characters, you don't do it out of you don't make them bad. You don't make, you know. So as a result, it's easy. It's like, I think when it's bad, it's writers that probably take gigs for the money for an assignment, and they don't really have that much of an inkling of what they, you know, what you should do with that character. You know, it's like, I can say this because no one's doing it now, but hypothetically, someone, I need a job, I need to pay the rent. We have Firestorm. So I'm like, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just really get into like atomic theory and get into all the science and blah, blah, blah. And it's just a boring piece of shit. Whereas the idea of like two people sharing one body and the constant banter and arguments and everything from, you know, Starsky and Hutch to Bud Abbott and Costello that you could do with that. And I'm just plucking that out of my ass. So, but I'm saying that's what makes a good character. Me and Jeff are good at that. I think a lot of writers now are good at that. I think Matt Fraction over at Marvel is excellent at doing that, as an example. And getting back to Mr. Rucker, his take on some older characters, I'm not sure how much people know about what's happening and the fact... Do you know that, like, Rucker's going to start doing action? Is that from the catalog?
Yeah, he's going to be doing
common knowledge.
Yep, Nightwing and Flamebird.
Okay, so he knows do Nightwing and Flamebird. That, his take already is so exciting and so interesting that I was, you know, it was sort of me, Jeff, and Sterling's playing field, and I was a little bit wary of...
We don't know who Flamebird and Nightwing are.
No. I was going to say, and we know.
I want to read it.
And we know who Nightwing is.
But I was very open to working with Jeff, but I was wary of anyone else coming into this. He has such great ideas that I'm excited to read the book. You know, very much so. So he's someone else now that's taking characters and reinterpreting them in a good way.
What characters that you haven't written would you like to, and any inkling that ever worked on Marvel characters?
I just have more affinity for DC. However, I will say this. I was offered... Marvel have a special series of one-shot books that are tying in with their 70th anniversary. And I don't know if I'm at liberty to say anything about this, except that one of them features Captain America in the 1940s. It's right up my street. And they've offered me that, and I'm doing that. It's just a one-off Captain America story.
World War II.
Marcus Martin.
He's
doing the art. It's going to be... I'm very excited to do that.
One of our favorite artists on the show.
I love the guy's work. Yeah. So getting to work with him, getting to do Captain America for one issue, it's not a huge commitment. I'm not going to screw it up. You know, I think... By the way, Ed Brubaker, another great writer, doing great work with characters. You know, what he's done with... He's you know, what I feel that
that's
what I did with Starman,
bringing Bucky back,
that doesn't piss on anything that's been done, that does it well. The Patriot, Nomad, he basically has touched on all these different versions of Captain America, and made you care about them again.
Well, I think of both Brubaker and Fraction. I think about what they did with Iron Fist, gave Iron Fist a context in which.
Yeah.
He's interesting. There's more to it than just like a guy with booties on.
Sal and I have this thing of asking certain writers that we think would really grasp onto it and do well. So, could you write the Invaders for us?
I will say this.
No.
I will say this. There are. I have always loved the Invaders. Do you mean present day or do you mean in the past?
World War II era.
I don't know. I really love the Roy Thomas, Frank Robbins ones. And what I love about those is I think Roy Thomas kind of bit himself in the ass. He was so slavishly married to DC Comics that he wanted to make every single piece of Golden Age continuity work within All-Star Comics.
Yeah.
North Star Squadron. And I think that sort of bit him in the ass. And then when Crisis happened, it just was a house of cards that fell down. Because ironically, characters that weren't even members of the Justice Society weren't a part of it.
Right.
With the Invaders, if you recall, what he did was he said that the comic books were World War II propaganda. And they were sort of happening, but... there was a lot of interpretation. So, for instance, I believe somebody was the Destroyer and then someone else becomes the Destroyer. You had the Asian Golden Girl. You had the Black...
Yeah.
What was his name? The Top or something? The Human Top? These were all real Golden Age Marvel characters that he reinterpreted and made that into a really, I think, great book.
Mm-hmm.
I just wouldn't want to step on his toes. I think what he did was great. And in the present day, the fact they killed off the Human Torch, I think, is complete bullshit. I think the first Marvel superhero you don't kill off. He's like Jay Garrick. You don't kill him off. You keep him around. And that was a huge mistake.
This is Rick Remender.
This is Tony Moore.
And you're listening to Around Comics, and you should be reading
Dear Agent.
we are going to say goodbye to you.
Okay.
Someone is hungry and saying, James, we must.
My lovely girlfriend is hungry.
She's like, get out of here. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what.
Stop with the nerd talk.
We've got some announcements that we can finish up after you leave. But James, just want to say it has been an absolute pleasure having you here. And actually, would you mind? Will
this,
no,
this is gonna get
no, this no, this is, no. I'll empty it out. But
no,
I'll
tell you, I'm sure you will.
I'm sure that's not gonna be a problem.
The half pint of Jim Beam will empty out and we'll make this one of our Hero Initiative donations and you can have a James. James Robinson autographed.
Yeah, Jim Robinson drinking Jim Beam.
There you go. From Jim to Jim. So, and we'll make that part of our Hero Initiative drive here for the end of the year.
Can I leave too?
No, you're here. You got to do another show.
What?
I'm leaving.
Wonderful.
Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure. Thank you. Oopsie-daisy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It has been wonderful. You have a great holiday.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It was nice.
It cost me about half of that half pint.
Yes. He was working that pint over quite a bit. He enjoyed that. But no, he was great. He's a great writer. The one thing, it's funny, when the Starman Omnibus came out, like I said, I hadn't read Starman before. I had was really excited that it was coming out because it was something I always wanted to go back and read and just never got around to buying the trades. And then when they announced that, it was like, okay.
Well, that's kind of what I was trying to get to when I, you know, fumbled through that question of, you know what, I fell out of comics, and this is one that from that era, people are just like, no, you need to go back and read this. This is one of the good things that, really good things that came out in that time.
When this came out and I started reading it, it was, you know, just... He's one of those writers that gives a lot of weight to very what could be inconsequential moments in the hands of other writers.
Give the path the Red Bee pathos. You haven't got to that point
no,
yet.
No, I haven't got. But I'm just glad he's back writing comics, and I've really enjoyed the stuff he's doing now.
Yeah,
and
stuff's
and,
great.
You know, the JLA thing that he's doing, that Captain America with Marcos Martin one shot that he talked about that. That'll be cool.
Yeah, when he said Marcos Martin, I got all goosebumpy.
But no, just a great guy. I mean, he's very, very nice to talk to. That's
great. Isn't
it? Tom, you and him were just like...
Oh, you were having a fun time.
That was...
That was almost like you...
You guys are hanging out a little
bit. That was almost like you and Carmine Infantino-esque. You guys, we're going to do a sitcom together. I'll tell you, let me tell you about a little cyberpunk here real quick.
Cyberpunk.
Yeah, are you ready for some cyberpunk?
Cyberpunk was dead.
Vexil, the 2-disc special edition, is now available on DVD and Blu-ray. From the creators of Appleseed comes a CG anime movie about the dangers of cutting-edge science and robotic biotech.
Sounds good.
Geek Magazine calls Vexil balls-to-the-walls action. In the battle between man and machine, humanity stands to suffer the most. Check out 30-minute clips of the movie at www.funimation.com/Vexil. For listeners that are bad spellers, that is Vexille. So I actually saw a little trailer that on the Afro Samurai Deluxe Edition had a trailer for Vexil, and it looks pretty cool if you're into Matrix-y type cyberpunk stuff. So.
Too bad, I'm not.
But I might.
Now you might.
I might be for this one of our sponsors. Forgot what was happening.
Well, hey, we got some great emails this week, and if you want to email the show, you can do so.
You don't have to be a podcaster or a comic book writer to do so.
Yeah,
anyone can email us.
Your name does not have to be Jeff Johns. Did you like that, Tom?
I did like that. Jeff Johns, why are you so awesome? From God.
gmail.com. But you can email the show at info@aroundcomics.com.
Yes.
And we will try and read your email on the podcast airwaves. Not really airwaves, are they? So, you know, we had mentioned the half pint of Jim Beam, which was being brutalized throughout the entire episode, and I have this now autographed by James Robinson, half pint of Jim Beam, empty, by the way, now.
Not yet.
I'm working on it. I'll finish it off, but. That's a perfect time to tell you about the Hero Initiative. We are collecting things that we will raffle off here at the end of December, and we've got some already some great contributors that have donated to the Hero Initiative. You can do that at the homepage aroundcomics.com. There's a PayPal donate link for Hero there. Donate to Hero, $10 minimum, whatever you want to do beyond that. Email me with a confirmation of your Hero donation. You'll get entered into a raffle. We've got the Jim Beam bottle. We've got some great stuff from Funimation, the entire first season of
I think we should
of
extend it. You originally said the 19th.
Yeah, we're going to run through
getting
December.
Like half a Jimmy John sandwich from John Byrne.
No, I ate that. I finished it.
Sorry. You have the wrapper from the sandwich that John Byrne.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of great stuff. Trades, we've got some signed merchandise. Rich Kozlowski kicked in some copies of The King. Mike Norton. We're going to do actually a silent auction for a Mike Norton page from Trinity. You can go to the forum at aroundcomics.com, and we've got that page posted. So start sending me silent auctions. That's up to $100 right now. So. And worth every penny of it and more. So we want to raise some more money with that. So it's a great time to remember the Hero Initiative and benefit veteran creators that are in crisis times. And economy's not good right now.
Final crisis times.
In their own final crisis. Yeah.
So
and they, like the rest of us, they don't understand what's happening.
Anti-life
They're
equation.
Confused.
All right. I love those iTunes music reviews. You can just go to the iTunes music store and leave us a review if you enjoy the show. I want to thank Punisher Chad, Phantom X04, and Better Ray Ryan, one of the best names out
Better
there.
Ray
Better Ray Ryan. All right. Remember, Tom versus the Flash about three times a week, two times a week,
two
whatever.
Two to three
times.
Sometimes two and a half.
You know, you've been saving me. I've been...
I never did.
I started working out a couple weeks ago. And yeah, I've lost 8 pounds in 2 weeks.
You look good.
That's all water weight. I gained it back in the bourbon tonight.
Whiskey weight.
But yeah, you saved me on the treadmill, man. That's 15 to 17 minutes. I'm hoping for shorter episodes, but
you see, the problem is when you have two stories, the thing that takes the most amount of time is explaining the setup. So two 12-page stories take more time than one 22-page story because you have to explain the setup of everything. It's killing me too. I can't wait till we get to when DC was only put out 18-page stories in the 70s. Those will be like 11 minutes long. Yeah,
a lot of fun. I really do enjoy it.
17 minutes for 24 pages.
I'm
jamming it in, man.
You are, man. That's a lot of content.
It's a lot of content.
You can, if you're not already sick of me, you can listen to more of me and Vince B.
What
and
if
David Price.
Already sick of you?
I try not to talk that much.
Oh, no.
Vince B.
Just have me on.
You might be my summer replacement. Vince B., David Price, and Jason Wood every week on 11 o'clock comics that comes out usually
Wood,
on Friday.
I just want to say that, I took a shot at you on 11 o'clock comics. I hope you don't.
Are we squashing the beef right now?
Yeah, I'm squashing. No, I felt bad about it afterwards, and I didn't want to, you know.
Wood will bring the heat back on you.
So I know. Beefing. I was expecting it this week, but I didn't.
I just don't like people beefing.
Well, I would like to, first of all, thank James Robinson for being here, obviously.
And drinking all our whiskey.
Our new, our not new home, our new temporary home here.
Whoa, wait a minute.
Mark Beatty will come in here with a tire iron and try and kneecap me if I say that. But our temporary home for this week and next week, Patrick
and
Dal.
Next week?
Yeah, well, next week's episode.
Oh, yeah.
Next week's episode. The
continuity got me all messed up.
Yeah, I know. It's like how time moves in the Phantom Zone.
However it needs to move for the story to make sense.
Patrick
Robinson was weirded out when I asked him to sign his afterword in the Starman omnibus instead of the front of the book.
That is
a little
odd.
Hey, could you sign that? I really like the afterword. I mean, I love the book, but for some reason the afterword really sort of, I don't know, was cool, right, and I just thought it was interesting.
Let's get this episode done.
Sorry.
Yes, definitely want to thank Patrick and Dal here at Challengers Comics and Conversation. It's a beautiful new store in Chicago.
This is a very cool store.
In that they have done such a nice job of setting this up. But, you know, we still have ultimate love for Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. We'll be back there in a couple weeks.
We are coming up on our arbitration year, though. So
yeah, I know. We need to renegotiate. Well, I've heard that the Yankees have put in a bid.
Sizable bid. Well, we'll see what happens. I would rather do the show on the West Coast, if possible.
Apparently, they've put in a bid, but they want Dark Tower to they want him to cover a portion of your salary.
Yeah. Our expiring contract. Yes. It's like the NBA.
No, we'll
getting ready for 2010 when all the podcasts are free agents. We just got sports talk.
Yeah. All right, everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with a whole new episode. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Come on, Tom, you've been funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. Come on. I used it all with James Robinson. I had to charm you. Sometimes I wonder if there's any truth to that at all. I've been lucky, and that's a fact.
Expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.